Mr. President.
Senator.
I'm not sure that I think when this bill was laid over, I think Senator Green had the floor at the time.
Well, Senator, you've got to bring it before.
I'd like to bring Senate Bill 749 before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. And Senator from 13th has the floor as you have an amendment pending, sir.
Thank you. I believe I was in inquiry of the senator from the...
Do you wish to resume that inquiry?
Would wish to resume the inquiry of the senator from... Was I... It's the senator from... 10th. Senator from the 10th.
Okay. The senator from the 10th, do you yield for inquiry? Proceed.
I do.
I think we need to go back 4 weeks. We were in discussion. The senator from the 24th bill is up for discussion, and I think one of the issues I was trying to talk to you about, and I hear there's been some changes, so I'm going to let that progress, but the issues I was talking to you about is when it comes to health care, and especially women's health care, of knowing some women that have had procedures done due to consultation with their OBGYN, and you and I talked about it afterwards, and
yes.
That's where you and I were at.
Yeah, I remember that conversation both on the floor and off the floor. And one of the concerns that we had with the last bill, that there was no definition of sterilization, that might include people who have medically necessary surgeries or other procedures that must be done, whether they be hysterectomies, you know, ovarian cancer, testicular cancer surgeries, even surgeries for endometriosis, which might result in sterilization. And the concern was that we didn't want to lump all of those folks in. And so we had a talk with the sponsor of the bill, and it's my understanding that when we finish our inquiry and when I withdraw my amendment, that there will be a new amendment that defines sterilization. And the way I understand it will be defined is it has to be an elective surgery or an elective procedure with the specific goal of sterilizing. So it would not include any of the other procedures that you and I discussed.
Now, as we go forth, and I just want one more question answered. Several times I have seen in the media this legislation, and I'm going to you as my free confidant, legal advice. Are we reaffirming current statutes? Some of this language is already in current statute.
Yeah, that's what it appears like to me, but I think there's also been some language to make sure that that it kind of tries to synthesize the two. But yes, it is essentially... what's in existing law.
Okay, I'm not going to delay any further, but that's where the conversation was, and I just wanted to reiterate that issue because it's not just representing constituency, but in life you have experiences of people you love that have gone. My mother passed away from uterine cancer, but several procedures were made for her passing dealing with some of these issues.
So exactly.
I wanted to make sure those issues were resolved because I know the Catholics have brought this issue forward. And I know you're not, but 6 of the 8 Democrats are Catholics. So I do want you to, I want to know on the floor that 6 of us have been raised in the Catholic religion, but we have clear questions about some of these issues.
Oh, absolutely. And I appreciate your openness with that.
Thanks,
Senator.
Does any other senator wish to be heard?
Mr. President.
Senator from 10th.
I have an amendment pending. Would you please send that back?
Send the amendment back. We're now back to the bill. Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion of the senator from the 24th? Who? Yeah. Senator, do you have an amendment to send for?
Yes, Mr. President, I have an amendment. It's been distributed. I request a waiver of the reading.
The reading of the amendment will be waived. Send it forward.
If I might explain my amendment.
After you move the adoption.
Move for the adoption of the amendment.
Proceed with your explanation, Senator.
Early in the session, we brought this bill forward, and we had some good debate, and a lot of issues were introduced that I attempted to then address in this amendment. So I'm going to go slow, and there's a number of different changes, but let me go through the different parts of the amendment. So first, what my amendment does is it It provides that the rights guaranteed under previous law in Section 376 are continued on, that these are just, this bill would do is just add to those existing rights that are in law. It provides that when an employer declines or refuses coverage for such items or procedures under this act, any health care provider shall make available and the employer shall provide an alternative health care plan that excludes coverage of abortion, contraception, sterilization. The cause of action that we asked, that we essentially 749 does, it creates a cause of action. It'll be one that the Attorney General may bring forward instead of shall. So we give we take away the shall. We do define sterilization in the amendment, and we define it to mean an elective medical procedure for which the sole purpose is to make an individual incapable of reproduction. And then we grant the ability to, as the Senator from the 10th discussed, we grant the ability to have this procedure for medical purposes. And we also we want to make clear, in point of fact, is that there's nothing in this bill that would preclude coverage for prescription contraceptive drugs or devices ordered by a healthcare provider as a result of a medical need that a person may have. So it is point of fact today that if you're a participant in a healthcare plan, that plan excludes contraceptive services today, that if in fact you have a medical issue that deems that your medical provider deems it necessary that you have contraceptive services, those services are actually covered in the plan today. So with that, I renew my motion to adopt my amendment.
Senator, this is the version of your amendment that has the number 2 at the top?
Yep.
Number 2.
Number 2.
For clarification. Thank you. Does any senator wish to be heard on this amendment? Senator from the 14th.
I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Does the senator yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Okay, so I know that you were trying to explain this amendment that you have, and I guess I'm looking for a little bit of clarification here.
Sure.
So the last statement that you just made was, if there is an individual woman, when I was in high school, I had a bunch of friends who didn't have consistent menstrual periods, and their doctors would advise them to take the pill so that they could have their menstrual period as other women do.
Right.
Saying that this amendment would allow that to still happen.
That's correct. Actually, what's not well publicized or understood is that those enrollees today in health care plans that are provided by employers that through the religious exemption don't offer contraception for purposes of avoiding becoming pregnant, that those enrollees, when their medical provider, when their doctor has a medical reason by which they require contraception, that today those enrollees in those healthcare plans that have sought the religious exemption, they in fact are allowed to then receive contraception for medical purposes. So
I'm glad that you did make some changes in there because there needed to be some changes. But if we are just reemphasizing what's in statute now, what's the point of this bill?
Well, clearly it's not clear. Okay, that even people that
I think it is clear.
Well, I think not.
I think there's a lot of politics going on nationally.
Well, but I think there's a tremendous amount of misinformation. Like, for example, one of the arguments for January 20th mandate that the federal government announced late on Friday afternoon, January 20th, one of the talking point issues has been, what are we to do with all these women that have a medical need for contraception? Won't you be precluding them from receiving treatment for something that there's a medical need? It's not been made clear in the public discourse that today those women receive those contraceptive services when their need for them are a result of a medical issue. So by introducing this in this bill, it now is exceedingly clear, this actual fact that it does exist in society today, but now it's become clear. So now it'll be understood. So I would venture to say that it's not clear that this is state of the world.
For those of us who are pro-choice.
Three senators on the floor. For what purpose is Senator from 50?
We know this. I mean, you're saying it's to clarify, but...
Yep.
Okay, so we're filing legislation to clarify what's already in statute.
No, not entirely. So Chapter 376 is, for example, one could suggest that in looking at Chapter 376, that it is the state of Missouri today that employers and employees have access to religious protections. So, for example, in 376, in kind of a roundabout way, it suggests that employers today can choose to offer a health care plan that doesn't offer contraception or abortion. It does not address sterilization. So sterilization is brand new. By the same, in the same way, in Chapter 376, it gives enrollees rights to not enroll in a plan that offers contraception and abortion services. It does not address sterilization. Sterilization is what's new. The amendment that you...
It's new language, but it's not a new concept.
It's a new... It provides a new protection for those religious employers and those enrollees. They now... Today, enrollees, if they're offered a plan that provides contraception services, they can request that they not be in that plan, and the health care provider has to provide them a plan that doesn't offer those services. They can now make the same request specific to sterilization services as defined in... Bill in 749. So what's new in Missouri law is definition of sterilization, and what's new in Missouri law is it allows a protection for both the employer and the enrollee. So that's new. I think, though, that this is that clarifying the fact that enrollees that have need for contraceptive services due to medical reasons, I think it is a service. This bill provides a service in that it clarifies and makes it understood. I have a very open-door policy when I hear from my constituents. I let pro-choice people come into my office and make their case. And when I suggested to them that, and they were obviously adamantly opposed to 749, and when I would suggest to them that the state of the law today is such that an enrollee can choose to say, look, you offer those services, I don't want those services, and the employer, the healthcare provider, has to offer that enrollee a plan that doesn't include contraceptive services. When I brought that fact in front of pro-choice groups, they kind of scoffed at me and said, well, that's not the law. I said, well, that is the law. They didn't understand the law to be that way. So, again, it's very complicated. 376 is a chapter. It's about mandates. It's about mandating prescription drugs, and then that's where they carve out exemptions.
Cell phones are not allowed that make noise, so please put them in a vibrate, put them on silence, or leave the Senate chamber. Proceed.
So again, those people that are very strong supporters of women's choice, it was not clear to them that the state of Missouri law, and I understand why it would be unclear to them, because 376 is a chapter that was designed to address a prescription mandate, not to address the rights of enrollees and employers. At the end of the result of 376, that enrollees and employers have certain rights to adhere to their religious convictions and not offer certain things. So the importance of 749 is to make it very clear to all parties, pro-life parties as well as pro-choice parties, what is Missouri law, and the addition of sterilization to that exemption, to make it understood, more fully understood, that people that happen to work for an employer who chooses not to offer contraception services, that in point of fact, that employee, if they need contraception for purposes of medical need, then a plan will allow for that. If I were a Georgetown Law School student and I needed contraceptive services for a medical purpose today, I would get that contraception for medical purposes.
Okay, so does your definition of sterilization include men?
It doesn't exclude, it doesn't mention sex. So it's both.
I'm looking at the front page of this, and I'm looking at the last couple of lines. So let's see. Define sterilization to mean any elective medical procedure for which the sole purpose is to make an individual incapable of reproduction, except that sterilization shall not mean when the procedure is for the purpose of making an individual incapable of reproduction because of hereditary genetic disease or some other disorder.
That I actually, to the extent that people out in back home are listening to our debate today, and they very well might be, a very strong pro-choice advocate came into my office last week, specific to this definition of sterilization, and shared with me the fact that she had a genetic disorder, that her decision to become sterilized was to not pass a very extreme genetic disorder forward, and so this definition of sterilization would allow her to have that procedure.
Can you show me exactly where this would cover men being sterilized as well, or go through their vasectomy procedure?
It doesn't get into procedure. It doesn't get it doesn't mention sex, as you can see in this amendment. So this is
But this is catered towards women. I want to make sure men are covered too.
How so?
This is an anti-woman bill.
You've named it the anti-woman bill.
No, there are hundreds of thousands of women across the country who call this anti-women.
They've made this anti-women.
No,
this
is anti-women. You're trying to tell me what to do with my own body. It is anti-woman.
No, what this says is that under the First Amendment,
anything that dictates what I can and cannot do with my own body is anti-woman.
This bill is about freedom of an employer. Let me ask you this question.
It's my inquiry.
Very good.
Go ahead.
Okay, so do employers today have the right not to offer health care?
Employers have a moral obligation.
Do they have the right not to offer health care?
You know, sometimes they don't.
Do they have the right not to offer health care? Is that a right that an employer has today?
If an employee is working under full time, an employee does not have to get health care. There are waiters and waitresses all across the state of Missouri who receive no health care at all from their employer.
And so your employer has a right not to offer health care today.
How many times are you going to ask?
Yes or no?
I mean, am I black? Okay. Am I black? I'm just trying to see how many times you're going to ask me the same question.
Fine. Okay, then now, does an employer have a right to offer a bad health care plan?
Well, that is determined by the employer and the employees, what they think about the.
Does the employer have the right to offer a fantastic health care plan?
It is subjective. That question is completely subjective.
What I think we can maybe agree on or not agree on, in my opinion, employers today in this country have the right to offer whatever benefits they desire. And an employer today has the right to offer a health care plan or a retirement plan or a dental plan, whatever they want to do, they can decide what they want to do. And prior to January 20th, religious institutions or any employer who on moral grounds felt compelled to offer a health care plan that didn't include these specific services, that employer retained that right to offer the health care plan, the benefit to his employees that he or she chose. What was declared, what the Health and Human Services Secretary and the administration announced late Friday afternoon on January 20th, is those employers no longer have that right to offer the health care plan, the benefit plan, that they wish their employees to have. Now, we've got health care mandates. Every single state has a health care mandate, very specific health care mandates. Most recently, in the state of Missouri, we have an autism health care mandate. That the way that mandate came to be is it was introduced in legislation, it was debated on this floor, it was debated in the House, it came to a vote, it then ultimately had to meet the governor's pen, it signed into law. This country, we're very used to mandates. Every individual state has their own set of...
The Supreme Court is discussing that as we speak.
This is interesting. The Affordable Care Act was, when passed into law, inside of the Affordable Care Act, there are actually some very specific mandates that were understood to be. One of which is that adult children age 26 will now be covered. That was in the bill. It was understood. It came to be law. Things like people with previous conditions now have to be accepted into health care plans. That was also very specific in the bill.
That was a great moral move.
The challenge, what the Affordable Health Care Act, and the reason I think there's lots of reasons why the public feels the way the way the public felt about that bill in 2009, the way they feel about it today, is that what that bill did is it concentrated power to such a degree, power that has never been concentrated to such a degree at the federal level, such that today the secretary, health and human services secretary, can decide what she decided on January 20th. She feels that she's got the power to reverse her decision at any point forward. And the challenge that we have as a country is we have to ask ourselves this question. Are we willing to give that much power to one person, specific in this case to something that's a big part of our lives? So that's the challenge.
ACA is really a concept that Newt Gingrich had. Brilliant idea. Brilliant idea, well, I have to say. And all of a sudden, it's becoming demonized. And I mean, it's a market-moved operation here. It's one of those things that's driven by the market, and it's great on the consumer end as well. I mean, if we're talking about ACA, because that means that a consumer gets to look around,
right,
buy around, and try to figure out which plan is the best for them.
It's interesting
they get to shop around.
It's interesting you bring up Newt Gingrich, in that here's someone that
I actually like Newt Gingrich.
Here's someone that he found himself in a position of power and authority, and he had a president at that time the two came together and they worked. And I think clearly one of the biggest accomplishments of the Clinton administration was the welfare reform legislation that was passed through the stewardship of Speaker Gingrich in conjunction with the administration.
You know where that came from? It came from Joe Maxwell, who was a senator in this body, and Bill Clinton took that idea for a national plan.
Hats off to Senator Maxwell. Now, but compare that process with what was the process.
I just wanted to let you know.
I appreciate
it came
that.
From a Missourian.
But compare that process to what was the process in 2009. In 2009, we had the administration and Congress had one of those rare moments in time where they had all the power and they had the capacity to pass legislation with the votes. They had a veto-proof majority in both the House and the Senate. And I think there are a lot of mistakes that were made in that process, but clearly what happened was what came out of that process was not a bipartisan effort. It was a one-sided effort.
Well, are you talking about the ACA?
I'm talking about ACA.
Oh, no, because the insurance companies...
No.
No. The insurance companies in this whole thing, they get off well in this deal. That 2,700-page document passed out of Congress.
When I'm thinking bipartisan, I'm thinking about two different political philosophies, two different political parties. I'm not thinking about a private industry.
Yeah, well, the private industry that you're talking about, insurance, they don't support people like me. They support people like yourself or other conservatives.
You know, quite frankly,
I'm saying is they got off real great
Senator,
in this ACA.
I'm offended. What is it? What is people like me? What does that mean? Are you talking about middle-aged white guys?
That's the question that I've asked for so long.
Well, you just described me as people like me.
Conservative. Yeah.
Oh, so it's liberal and conservative. Fine. Look, it's interesting. I would contend that there was no bipartisan effort in the creation of the Affordable Care Act. But there was one group that the administration went out of their way to pull into the process, and that was the Catholic community. And they invited the Conference of Bishops and lots of other Catholic leaders to the table.
There are three senators standing. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
I think that's a great idea, okay?
Such as myself as a black woman?
No, as a woman
just,
who...
I'm giving back what was handed out. I mean, you did the same thing.
I didn't introduce race, you introduced race. I didn't introduce gender, you introduced gender. I mean, it works.
Gender
it's very
bill.
Effective.
This is the gender bill.
Does it say male or female anywhere in the bill?
No, but I asked you a question. Does this also cover men? And you said it's not specific, and
I'd
like to know
how it's not. It covers sterilization. It covers, you know what, I think...
There's probably not an outcry in America about men getting vasectomies.
That's not the point. You're making it a point.
But I do hope to make a point. I do hope that you make a point, too. And I'm waiting for that point.
My point is that all of us, people that have both sides of this particular, this is the top, the mandate, the topic of this mandate is contraception, abortion, and sterilization. That's today's topic. The power exists to take up this topic or any other topic. If the Affordable Care Law goes into law, and let's say that we have a dramatic change in the administration, a dramatic change in Congress, such that we've got the most ardent conservative president, the most ardent conservative Congress, the power that's in the Affordable Care Act that exists, that the new Secretary of Health and Human Services could stand up and say, you know what? Here's the way health care works in this country now. We'll cover the birth of a child if the parents are married. It sounds crazy. The outcry would be extraordinary. But that's the power that exists. That's the problem with the ACA, is it concentrates power in hands that have never had that much power. Here, when I talk about it here in the state of Missouri,
I don't see that. I mean, this whole debate about the health insurance exchange, it gives this state and the people of this state power to have an insurance program that provides for everyone. How can that be wrong? And how is that giving the federal government power? This is exactly the conversation we should be having right now.
But
the Supreme Court is talking about this
issue
right now. People are protesting in D.C. and all over the country because they care about the fundamental right of having health care for all and equal access to whatever an individual needs. That is a conversation that deserves
that,
to be had.
That broad thought, the Catholic community endorses wholeheartedly. Our job here in the state General Assembly is to pass laws that are specific, that take issues, we define them, and we pass the law. Can you imagine if, by some will of this body and the governor, if Missouri, if think that they had passed a version of ACA such that they gave the power to our Secretary of Health and Human Services to decide what goes into insurance plans? That person could wake up one day and, as I described before, say, look, you're not married, you don't get covered. Wake up the next day and say, you know what, we're covering everything. That's how much power that ACA has given one person. And the danger for our country, and you should be.
I'm so amused right now, and I want to take this opportunity to give you some history. When I was in the House of Representatives and sat on the Committee of Small Business, there was a bill that was filed and heard that has some of the same elements of ACA, same elements. And it was sponsored by a Republican. Group health insurance for small businesses. Wow, what a novel idea. I supported the bill. Well, guess what? ACA does that. It provides
when you draft health policies.
It was a Republican that filed it. So now it's bad to have group health plans for small businesses, apparently. I'm trying to figure out where is the party?
But the issue with ACA is not individual specific parts of the bill. That's not the issue. The issue is the 5,000 places in the bill where the Health and Human Service Secretary may or shall do whatever he or she thinks they should do that day
now,
specific
I've
to health care.
I've read the 2,700 pages of the ACA. Have you read 2,700 pages?
Clearly not. I wasn't asked to vote on it.
Well, you know, I want to be an informed constituent. I wish I had time to read 2,700 pages of it, but I've done the best of my ability to this point, and I'm still learning about this stuff.
Is that how legislation should be passed? That years after the fact, people that you support ACA.
I do. I've been doing research ever since it passed.
And yet you still haven't completely digested the book.
And I said very publicly, I don't like passing legislation so quickly.
Okay.
So here's what's so funny about that, because when I was looking at another one of your bills this morning to reduce the time limit of session, and we're having this conversation right now, and you just posed that question, absolutely it takes time to digest this stuff. If I was in the federal government as a legislator, I would be absolutely opposed to having to just pass something so quickly. It deserves conversation, just as your bill deserves conversation. And I'm glad that you've pondered on this and you've made some changes. I don't know how it's good policy to just reintroduce something that's already in statute.
Well, I reiterate the fact that it adds sterilization, that's new. It defines sterilization, that's new. It creates a cause of action for the Attorney General, that makes it clear. Now, there's two sides of that. You know, the knee-jerk reaction is that if this becomes law today, that Attorney General Koster will never take this up. And if Attorney General Koster is reelected, he'll never take this up. But let me give you a scenario under which he very well might. The decision that and it's not just Catholic, it's all religions. Catholics as an institution tend to purchase the health care insurance. Other Christian faiths, Baptist, Lutheran, tend to self-insure. They're impacted by this too. All of those religious leaders, as a result of this January 20th edict, are being asked to compromise on their religious principles to such a degree that if they carry their religious principles all the way through their thought process, the time may come where the decision they have to make is to no longer offer health care to their employees and to just pay the fine. And under that circumstance, you may find Attorney General Koster look at this cause of action as a way to defend Missouri citizens that have just lost tens of thousands of people. You see the difference. What's so cynical about the January 20th edict is that on some level the administration acknowledges the need for a religious exemption. But they've decided, and this is what's so scary, this is like one person decides where does religion start and where does it stop. And this one person said, you know what, when you're in worship, that's religion. When you're being educated to become a priest or a nun or a leader in religion, that's religion. But when you leave the church and you go to take up the mission of your religion, that's not religion anymore. And that's a scary... Think about that. That power exists as a result of ACA, and one person decides where religion stops and where it starts.
I don't think that's the truth. I don't think that's the case.
No, that's what...
Senator,
Did you read the January 20th edict? They define very explicitly. They define very explicitly.
Religion is always... You're always practicing religion.
Not according to the
Secretary of Health and Services. You should always be practicing your personal beliefs.
Then how do you wrap your brain around this idea that the Health and Human Services Secretary says, you know what, you get the exemption when you're in church. You get it because there's religious freedom. But when you go to take what you learn in church and practice it, when you go to Catholic Charities and you service the poor, when you go into the inner St. Louis and you educate the poor, and when you open up your hospitals to the bleeding on the front door, when you do those things that you've learned as a result of your moral teaching, you're not religious. But now that's not religion anymore.
I think it is religion.
Then join.
No, because we differ in our opinion on this. Again, I agree with your last statement. In all that we do, all of the activities that we do.
But the administration doesn't.
It is a reflection of what we are taught.
But the administration doesn't agree with us. The administration disagrees with you and I. They have decided that
that's not religion. So is this an anti-administration? Because you could do a resolution for that. We don't have to do a bill if you just are disgusted with the administration. We could do a resolution that says you will not have full power over us. I mean, I'm trying to figure out,
this bill is the best Missouri can do legislatively. This bill reaffirms...
Then that is a sad day. If that's the best Missouri can do, then this is a sad, sad, pitiful day.
Well, Senator, I respect your opinion, and I appreciate your inquiry, and... willing to keep going if you are.
Here's the next issue that I have. The next issue is alternative health plan. It starts at number 11 on your amendment. Now, how would a business offer an alternative health plan? Now, employers, they shop around for all this stuff. They're trying to get the best deal, and I'm not the one to be saying that I'm always on the side of small business. My mom was a small business owner, is now. So I'm trying to figure out how, if you're looking for a good health insurance program, something that is cost effective, how is an employer just going to come up with an alternative plan out of the blue?
Okay, the employer, there's two different types of employers. There's one employer that self-insures, okay? So employer that self-insures, what the bill says is if somebody's an enrollee in the plan, I'm an enrollee in the plan, and I come to the plan and it offers contraception, that I can choose to be in a plan that doesn't offer contraception.
How many people are going to truly be offended by a plan that offers contraception even if they don't use it? I mean, I don't hear an outcry.
Well, well, you don't hear an outcry. Actually, most people aren't even aware of the fact that when you're join a company and you learn about the healthcare plan, that they're not even aware of the fact that when that plan includes coverage of these services, that you have the right as a Missouri citizen today to say, look, I don't want these services. You need to offer me a plan without them.
Okay, so how does that happen?
It happens today.
Not,
so healthcare provider.
I've not heard that. So small, but let's say your Fitz's in U City. Your Fitz's. And one of the full-time waiters, let's just say full-time.
So let's say Fitz's, they're owned by a private equity firm, but let's say that they go out to the market and they buy a healthcare plan from MetLife or something, or United Healthcare. So they buy United Healthcare's plan. And I work at Fitz's and they offer United Healthcare. And I learned about the healthcare plan and I see that the healthcare plan covers all these things. As an enrollee today, I have a right, and the healthcare provider knows this, that the enrollee has a right to tell the healthcare provider and or tell their employer, I don't want these services, and then United Healthcare, in this example, they're already set up and they understand that they then have to offer that person the healthcare plan that doesn't cover these things. That's how it works today. So there's no burden on the industry. What it does, it gives the enrollees to have less things covered, not more things covered. So it's easier for a healthcare provider not to offer certain things. It'd be like if I said, look, I'm opposed to anything that's in my healthcare plan, I don't want it. It's easy for them not to offer it.
You were invited to a panel discussion on Sunday by a coalition of people.
I went to a pre-meeting for that bigger meeting.
And I was at one, too, at the same place in your district, Sheremeth.
Right.
And the panel, again, several of us were invited to it, but it was set up in a really odd way where a bunch of your constituents actually stood up before a crowd of like 200 people and started talking about
at my meeting, I heard from at least 15 people.
Healthcare that they have.
It's a very personal experience.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And there are people, now there's one story specifically that just really, really bothered me of a woman who was giving, it started out as a hypothetical. There's a stroke, then there's a heart attack, and then there's a fall. I don't know where the fall was in the house, but there's a fall, and there's a broken limb, and none of those things were actually covered. None of those things.
I understand. I heard all the same stories.
Not one of those things was covered.
I heard that.
A heart attack and a stroke.
I understand. That's
really?
That's not what January 20th was about. January 20th wasn't about
that. That was the alternative health plan.
No, January 20th.
That was the alternative health plan.
What 749 does is it directs the edict of January 20th. It's very specific. It's about employers' rights and enrollees' rights. What January 20th did is it took those rights away. Okay, now, I couldn't go to that meeting. My daughter had a concert, actually, in Independence, and it was a wonderful concert, so I couldn't be there. I went to all the pre-meetings. I heard the stories. There's a reason why the Catholic community supported the Affordable Care Act, because they not only hear those stories, they're in the trenches on those stories. They're there offering health care services to the uninsured. They're there servicing the poor.
And how many, here's what was interesting to find out, is all of those people who are in the ministry, the stories that I heard on Sunday from your constituents saying that they can't offer their own employees insurance. The people in your district and in mine are already in the ministry. They have churches. And they are unable to provide health care for their own employees.
And the decision
That's
to provide health care is their decision. If the religious
order, because they can't afford it. Yet we say on this floor and other places, let churches and all of these different congregations settle it or handle it. One person in particular, Mark, and I forgot his last name, he has a church in my district and is a constituent in my district, and he said that they try to give out at least $4,000 or $5,000 to help people all the time, yet he cannot provide health insurance
for
his own employees at the church.
The challenge of non-for-profit ministries and churches and charitable organizations that are out servicing the poor, it's a huge financial burden. How ironic, though, that the Catholic and Christian communities that carry out their religious mission, that find a way to afford to offer health care to their employees. When Catholic Charities has to offer health care to their employees,
so it's
that
okay
comes out
for the Catholic Church to have coverage and not for the Catholic, other churches?
The church you're referring to, they made the decision because they couldn't afford to offer it. They have the right. Think about it.
Where do they get it? So where do they get health care then? From the state or from the ACA?
ACA will mandate. Again, this gets back to individual rights.
And part of ACA individual says... Part of ACA says if you're in that gray area,
right,
there will be a grant program so that everyone can be covered.
Look, and St. Louis is a tremendously...
They even go into tax credits in the ACA. I mean, I was surprised.
St. Louis is a tremendously charitable place. There are over 10,000 non-for-profits, a lot of them one and two and three-man organizations doing good works in our community. When the ACA, if the ACA Act becomes law, and a very small non-for-profit has 3 or 4 employees, that they're doing good works, they're serving the poor, but given and they're working for almost nothing, but given the financial situation of that charity, they can't offer health care insurance because they don't have the financial means to offer it. When ACA becomes law and they either have to offer health care or pay a $2,000 fine, the irony of ironies is that charitable organization might say, look, we're done. We can't serve the poor anymore. We can't afford to pay our employees bare-bone numbers and pay for their health care as mandated by the federal government. You just give me a great example. What you just brought forward is that's the right of that employer today is to serve the poor and not pay their employees, not give their employees health care.
Religious employers, you're saying.
You happen to point out religious employers.
Any employer
can choose not to offer health care, but in your example, you have a church that you implied that it does good works, it does ministry.
There's a synagogue as well. One of the rabbis who's part-time, and she was talking, she's part-time, she cannot get health care. She cannot afford insurance.
Her employer...
She's not full-time.
Her employer decides. If I own my own company, I'm an employer, I can cover everybody. I can cover the full-time employees, I can cover the part-time employees. Yes, I can. It's cost prohibitive. Yes, it is. But I still have the right to decide.
If you have a cookie jar with a bunch of cookies in it, and then you eat all the cookies, you can't go back to the cookie jar and expect more cookies. When you're out of money, you're out of money.
Exactly. And the church you describe that's serving the poor, that can't offer health care today, when the federal government mandates that they pay a $2,000 fine or offer health care, the cookie jar will be empty, and their ability to carry out their mission...
But do you understand it's a shared cost? It's a shared cost. I mean, it seems like a basic principle. You get more people in a program, costs go down. And added to that, consumers get to shop around and figure out what kind of health plan they actually want.
There is nothing about the Affordable Care Act that's simple. And that's the challenge of that law. Again,
do you think that anything that we pass is simple? I mean, we're about to hear an education bill that's completely complex. The senator from Buchanan has a very complex idea that is absolutely marvelous, dealing with the hand up. It's complex.
And then,
I had to get him to map that thing out on my human size post-it in my office. Complex and layered. But does it make sense? Absolutely. Sometimes you have complexity in some of the things that you're trying to pass.
So to the extent that you would desire something to be...
You just learn to understand it. You learn to understand it.
Well, in 749, you're not asked to consider too far. This is simple and plain. It's straightforward. The Affordable Care Act is an issue.
It's straightforward that we're reiterating what's already in statute.
And adding sterilization and creating a cause of action and defining sterilization and reiterating the fact that women who need access to these things for health purposes... Point of fact, get them today. Georgetown Law School students today, when they...
Georgetown isn't in Missouri.
When they need contraception for medical purposes, they get it. Today. And that is not understood in this country. And what Missouri can do by passing this law is they can make clear that fact.
Perhaps it's not understood by people who don't take contraception, but people who are... pro-choice and just are supportive, they know that already.
Well, I would suggest that they have not stepped forward to share that information in the public discourse.
You know, I've written about it.
3 senators on the floor. Senator from the 10th.
But in any case, I think you were talking, actually.
And I've lost my train of thought. But again, I remember we were roundabout way where I was suggesting that this... Again, this is a very narrow focus bill This is a bill that responds very specifically to the January 20th edict. It's the best that Missouri can do. It actually makes known, it makes known facts that are clearly not understood outside of the law.
Are we creating legislation to respond to religion? I mean,
we are creating legislation to reiterate the rights of our employees and employers that clearly the federal government has decided we as citizens
we
of Missouri no longer
Blaine
have.
Amendment. We have something called the Blaine Amendment in Missouri. And, you know, I hope there's not a confusion of religion and policy in this. I hope we're not responding to a religious
We're responding to the federal government trampling the rights mm-hmm. as provided by the First Amendment. And we're responding, and we're actually, this is a...
We'll have order in the Missouri Senate. There will be no applause. Proceed, Senators.
And what we're doing is we're holding up for all citizens of the state, all citizens of the country, pro-choice citizens, pro-life citizens, we're holding up an example of what it means to concentrate power the way the ACA Act has concentrated power. The concentration of that power should scare the living daylights out of us. And the country, it's very interesting, when you draft a 27, you pass a 2,700-page bill, there's all kinds of ways to talk around the bill. You can talk about, oh, Gingrich started this, and the insurance company did that, and Republicans did this.
And Romney Care as well.
And what it does, though, what it does is it takes away from the understanding that we've concentrated power in a way we've never done before in this country.
So
we've given the
we
rights.
We didn't complain about power, you know, when we were dealing with Bush and what he was trying to do, but we're complaining about power now with the ACA.
What 749 does is it holds up, it shines light on this concentration of power that should, as I said, should scare all citizens of the state, all citizens of the country.
You know what concentration of power I'm concerned about? The fact that there are 8 of me and 26 of you. That's a concentration of power that I deal with every single day.
And
you
guess
know what?
What
other concentration? That I'm one of three out of 34. I deal with that concentration of power
every
day,
too. Here's the thing is, there's not one single one of us that can wake up some morning and decide what the law of the land will be. We don't have that right.
You know,
we could be 34 to 0. We have
basic principles in place, and that's called the Constitution.
It could be 34 Republicans to no Democrats, and not one of us can wake up in the morning and make law. And that's what the ACA Act does. It gives the power to one person out of 330 million people.
To one person?
To wake up in the morning.
Who's that one person? Tell me who the one person is.
The Secretary of Health and Human Services. Uh-huh. Whoever that person may be.
And who hired that person?
And who hired, doesn't matter who, what do you mean, who hired that person?
Who hired that person?
He was appointed by the President of the United States.
Okay, so that makes two people, so it's not one person. And who elected the President?
Okay, look.
Who elected the president?
You're,
because whoever elected the president is the boss of the president. So that is not one, it's not two, but I think it may be about 50 million people.
And when that happened, and I, you know what? I want you to remind all of us over and over and over again exactly who was elected in 2008. Who was elected? President Obama was elected. And what did this country do in 2008? They elected supermajorities in the Senate and supermajorities in the House. That's what the country did. And when they did that, that body, that president, that Congress enacted this. This is what they did. They said, gosh, in the Missouri Senate, Maria Chappelle Nadal, excuse me, the senator from the 15th,
14th.
Senator, we do not use senators' names on the floor.
Senator from the 14th, she has the right to slow things down, to stop things, to filibuster things. They make laws in Missouri. There's nowhere where there's people make edicts. That Congress in 2009, that president in 2009 said, we need the power. We need to take that power away. It's ironic. The Senate and the Congress.
I don't see it as a power issue. I see that people are losing health care every day. And you know what? Here's I'm going to change the subject for a second.
Well,
there are some bikers who came to my office the other day, and they want the repeal of the helmet law.
Right.
So I said, fine, let's take away your privileges to Medicaid. And you know what they said? Oh, no,
you know
we have to keep
Senator,
that.
Senator, I told them the same thing. I told him the same thing. And here's the
thing. There's no right to that. If you do not want to practice safety, there's no right to that.
There were some extraordinarily powerful conservative voices in the 60s that stood up in front of the country and said, this path that you now call Medicare that is here to address a symptom, and the ACA has addressed a symptom, when you as a people give government responsibility for something and you rely on government, as we now ultimately do all these years later, senior citizens, Medicare is the only place they can go. When you give government that power, you give up your freedoms. Okay, and the guys that are on their motorcycles that don't want to wear their helmets, what I told them, I said, look guys, you've already told government, when I'm a senior, take care of my health care. If I fall off my bike, come pick me up. When I can't work anymore, give me Social Security disability. You've said to government, if I fall, you take care of me. Well, when you do that, you give up freedom. And that's what's happened. And that, and the people that spoke so loudly against Medicare in 1965, you go back and you watch those discussions and you read those talks, guess what? It happened. Exactly as predicted, it happened. So we've got the baby boomers now, as they go through into retirement. Guess what? There are baby boomers who spent their whole lives as completely independent people. And I'm middle class, lower class, upper class. They think they've led their lives completely independent of government. They've not relied on government. But guess what? Every single one of them, when they go to insure themselves as a senior citizen, is now reliant upon government. That's what happened. That's what the Affordable Care Act does now.
The
Affordable Care Act now says
The
Affordable Care Act attempts to...
You know, Social Security was a complex issue, too.
Think about what I'm saying.
It was controversial and it was layered. Good idea, but it was layered. It wasn't simple.
Okay.
Social Security was not simple, Senator. It was not easy, yet it provides...
you and I could...
We could spend days talking to our seniors.
Today we're here to discuss...
But that was not simple either. Would
discuss,
you agree?
We're here to discuss 749.
I know, but you're talking about all the powers in the ACA, and you're saying that this is complete control of one person.
And it is.
You know, complex... Well, there are other complex ideas that have passed and are great law. Now.
I ask you to offer to me today or in the future an example of such concentration of power anywhere else in government today.
Yeah, look at the Supreme Court and who is in the majority of the Supreme Court.
What one member of the Supreme Court will decide?
You know, let me tell you this, and I've studied the Supreme Court, actually, but let me tell you, that's why I was so concerned about Justice Kennedy being the fifth vote for the Citizens United case. And look at what's happening now. Democracy is taken away. Republicans are saying democracy is taken away. The voice of people is taken away today because now corporations are seen as people. Yeah. That's a problem. Concentration of power.
Then let's celebrate.
That's a big
let's
problem
celebrate the
here.
Fact that 749
and when Justice Kennedy was
shines
number five
a light on this
on that vote, it was not a good decision. Now they're trying to figure out, should they hear other cases that deal with the same subject matter? Because they had no idea that control and power would be taken by so few. Those few people like the Koch brothers and Rex Singfield and all these
Senator,
you've
gone off topic for me now.
Market people. No, you're talking about power. We're talking about power. You brought power up.
And
you said you don't want power to be controlled by one person.
I've described it in terms of what is in 749, and, you know, if you want to continue to discuss...
That's fine. Mr. President, I end this inquiry.